Tomas, as foretold, even the S&Ps are up 7, NASDAQ's now down 2. But all that means nothing when you've got this man. Dr. Jim is in the house, a skinny on options, abstract applications. Nothing says Monday like this man.
What's going on, gentlemen?
Doing good. How you doing?
How do you guys want to play it this morning? I mean, there's so many ways we could go. I mean, we could go Caleb Williams. You guys want to go Caleb Williams? We can go Caleb Williams. We can go our Boston Red Sox, take 2 out of 3 from the Chicago Cubs. We can go that way if you guys want to go that way. I mean, how do you guys want to play it this morning?
I'd rather go Caleb Williams.
Okay, fair enough. So, I mean, should we all already give our condolences to his quarterback career?
To his what?
To his quarterback career. He got drafted by the Chicago Bears. It's over. It's over, Johnny.
Well, right now, we'd like to think that we're Super Bowl bound, okay?
Of course, naturally. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, I mean, they went offense, man. They went that kid from Washington, and they went Caleb Williams. I mean, there's your 1-2 right there.
There you go.
Gotta like it.
Right now, book your Super Bowl tickets. I don't know where the Super Bowl is next year, but we're already making plans.
So you think it's going to be Dolphins Bears? No, I don't think so.
Dolphins.
Hey. No. My Dolphins against your Bears? I don't think so. The only thing
the Dolphins have going for them is they're in the worst division in football, but other than that, nothing.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah.
Sad but true.
Yeah. I don't know if they could beat a 40-year-old quarterback, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, you know, your boy over there playing for the Jets, I don't know, he may take the division crown this year. We'll have to wait and see about that. But yeah, the Red Sox looked pretty good against the Cubs. I got to be honest, they gave them a little beat down there on Saturday.
The Cubs, you know, they're kind of walking wounded. They got everybody's hurt, but we'll be back.
Are you kidding me, dude? The Red Sox, everybody's hurt, dude. I had to give them 2 innings at second base the other night. Everybody's hurt. You know what's funny about that? So I was a decent athlete when I was younger, but I'm no longer. No, I mean, I honestly got the medals to prove it, man. Like when I was, you know, when I was a senior in high school, I was actually, so I went to Notre Dame Catholic High School, and I actually, for middle linebacker, I actually made all academic, all league, and all Catholic. So the next level would have been all state. So I got to go to the Silver Dome to like get a medal, and my dad was like super excited to do it, and it was awesome, right? So I was all league, all academic, and
Jim,
all Catholic.
Jim, you know, I have never seen a medal being given out for a football player in my entire life, but you got one?
I did, right? And then as soon as that was concluded, we got on a plane and we went to the World Series in Oklahoma. So it was an amazing week of my life. Like, it was a really, really amazing week of my life.
How do you come down that high? I mean, it's amazing.
Well, no, but what's funny is I have come down from that high quite a bit, actually, because so I don't play softball. I've only played a couple of times, but so I played softball when we used to live in Charlotte with a bunch of buddies of mine. And like, you know, I'd never played before or whatever. And they're like, all right, Jim, like, what position you want to play? I'm like, man, I don't know, dude. Like, I haven't fielded a ball in a while. They're like, well, it's softball. It's pretty straightforward, you know, whatever. I'm like, well, so they threw me in right field and I got a couple of fly balls and man, I was totally lost. Like, obviously lost in the lights, but I couldn't catch them. Right. So then they put me at second base. Your second base is like worse than right field in softball. And I got a couple grounders and they just ate me up, dude. I just couldn't do it. And so then they threw me behind the plate. I was the catcher on our softball team, which is definitely where you put your absolute worst player.
That's what Tony played. Don't say that to him. He hasn't figured it out yet.
Yeah. So Tony, I feel you, man. Catcher on the softball team. That's a tough draw.
Yep. 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 It happens.
But occasionally you get run over at home plate, so that makes it all worthwhile.
That's right. True. Got into a couple altercations, you know. There's no doubt about that. No. Yeah. All right, gentlemen, let's hear some finance here this morning. We've got a big week. We got Amazon earnings. We got FOMC on Wednesday. We got Apple earnings on Thursday. But we are going to take a little trip down memory lane this morning, gentlemen. John, get us going here on the title slide. So crash asymmetry. So, John, if we could do the three on the side and the slides in the middle, that would be really, really helpful. And so crash asymmetry, We're going to take a little trip down memory lane. So, John, go ahead and hit us here on the intro slide. And if you can, let's see. I still can't quite see the slides. Let's see here. Yeah, I see the slide there, John, but I can't. It's a little small for me. Can you shift us around a little bit?
Hold on, Jim.
Sure. Oh, well, now I can't see the guys, but I can see the slide.
That's all you need.
So, yeah, let's see here. I might be able to do this a different way. Hold on a second.
Jim, you can pin the slides, you know. Do you know how to pin the slides?
No, I don't. I'm going to do this a different way.
He only knows how to get medals at football events.
I mean, all I'm saying is, all league, all academic.
To pin a slide, Jim, all you got to do is put your cursor over the slide that you want pinned, and there's three dots that come up on the right. If you click those dots, it'll say pin or replace pin.
Yeah, but if I pin it, then what happens? Do I lose you guys forever? That feels like an action I'm not sure I want to take.
Only you will see it.
I will see it. Okay, well, actually, I pulled up the slides on my other monitor, so we can do it that way.
All right, beautiful.
So now I don't even need it, really, but I still can't see Tom. So my educational crescendo. So we're going to take a little trip down memory lane, and this was, without question, the coup de grace of my educational career. We've talked about this before, but we've never talked about it this way, and so I'm going to be very curious to hear what you guys have to say and what you guys think about this. So it is well documented that markets often fall on the way down much faster than they rise on the way up. Well, in my dissertation, I discovered one possible reason for this phenomenon in analyzing institutional order flow, where the price impact asymmetries that institutional traders have to absorb on their buys and sells in different market conditions support the higher velocity moves to the downside that we observe. So, Tom, are you excited to talk about my dissertation again? Because we've talked about this before.
Jim, I was telling Tony the other day, we were talking after the show was over, and I said, you know, wouldn't it be great if Jim could talk about his dissertation one more time? And Tony was like, I don't know if I could handle it. I'm like, I really want to hear it. So,
I mean, here you go, man. I mean, this morning we've already talked about all league, all academic, all Catholic. Haven't talked about that in a while. We did also briefly reference the World Series of baseball that I played in Oklahoma, of course.
And the month anniversary. And the month anniversary. Let's not forget that.
We've talked about the month anniversary. I think we did that before the show actually started. But yes, this Wednesday we have FOMC and the month anniversary coinciding and colliding, which is amazing. And now we're doing my dissertation.
And truth or skepticism.
Guys, we're doing my dissertation.
How is Autumn going to miss truth or skepticism for the month anniversary?
She never misses truth or skepticism.
Okay.
She hasn't missed a show. No. We'll work around that. That's not going to be a problem. That's not going to be a problem at all. You know what the best part about this is? The best part about what we're going to talk about for the next, 10 minutes or so? So you have to keep in mind. So at the University of Memphis, like our specialty was market microstructure. So our specialty was order flow. Our specialty was market making behavior. Our specialty was, buys and sells, right? And so keep in mind that these thoughts that I'm going to share with you this morning, this is not a 2024 Dr. Jim. This is like a 2007 regular Jim. This was before Dr. Jim.
I find this so amusing, but I can't wait to hear what you have to say, because I'm sure
this is going to be great. It couldn't be more relevant. It absolutely couldn't be more relevant. All right, so John, go ahead and hit us on the next slide. So here it is. Here's the mathematical linchpin that ties together the whole dissertation that I handed. Oh, by the way, quick little story. And actually, I have never shared this story on air before, I don't think. So the day that I handed in my dissertation, right? So like it's done. It's all been approved, like rubber stamped, like it's good to go. It's all been printed, like exactly how they want it. I'm carrying my dissertation, like the physical form, to the dissertation office. And like, obviously I'm going through all kinds of emotions. I mean, this is it. My educational journey is over. It's been, 12 years or however long it's been. It's been a long time. So I go in there to hand in my dissertation. My dissertation was 87 pages long. Which, that doesn't mean anything to you, but just to let you know, in the world of dissertations, that's like a pamphlet. That's like nothing. So I handed in my dissertation, and the woman legitimately said, "Is that it?" And I said, "Yeah, this is it." And she said, "Okay." Well, next to her was a thicker stack than mine. It was maybe 120 or 140 pages long. And I said, "Oh," I said, you obviously have another dissertation. And she said, "Well, that's part of it." I said, "Part of it?" She said, "Yeah, that's a history dissertation. And those are just the footnotes." So somebody before me handed in 140 pages of footnotes, and I showed up with a pamphlet, and somehow they let me out. So y'all may not find that story as amusing as I do, but in the world of dissertations, it's pretty funny.
We didn't find it, I think, as amusing as you did.
All right, so anyway, the mathematical linchpin. So this was kind of the string that held all the pearls together in my dissertation. So what I was trying to measure was the price impact that institutional traders would have to absorb when they went to execute and fill large orders. So not Johnny's, like Tom Sosnoff, like Tony Batista. We're talking like real big orders, these block trades that came through the marketplace. So what I was measuring was the price impact, which was the average trade price, because these institutional traders would often split up their orders so that they could kind of stealthily get them executed and minimize the price impact on the actual trade package, which, quick little shout out to, and he's in the footnote there. There was a researcher, I'm sure he's still doing research to this day, Shigato Chakravarti. So in 2001, he published a paper on stealth trading. It's one of the most, you know, popular papers in the world of market microstructure. He is without question in the top 10 of all researchers in the field of market microstructure worldwide. And he was actually on my dissertation committee. So I actually had to like present my work to him, which was very, very intimidating. It's not like talking to a Tom Sosnoff or a Tony Batista. Like I was talking to somebody that's like legit. And he said, "Yeah, this is some good stuff." So anyway, the average trade price minus benchmark price.
He was impressed.
He was impressed. And especially when I showed him my medals, he was like, "All right, we got to let this guy out. He's going to do some things." So average trade price minus benchmark price. Now, the benchmark price is oftentimes in the literature, there's a few different things that are used. But the VWAP at the time of the start of the trade package was the most common benchmark price that would be used to determine the price impact. Okay, so this is what I was measuring. Okay, all right. So you guys with me so far?
Sure.
So far.
All right, you're going to love this, Tom. This is tailor-made for you, my friend. So the next slide. So this was my hypothesis. So my hypothesis was the prior literature suggested that it's always more costly for institutional traders to buy a stock than to sell a stock. Because the thinking was, the prevailing wisdom was, well, there's a number of different reasons why somebody might sell. There's a million different reasons. But there's really only one reason why an institutional trader or any trader might buy a given stock at that moment in time. It's because they feel like they have an advantage in that stock, especially when you're talking about institutional traders. Okay. My hypothesis was what you're going to observe with price impacts is actually largely contingent on A, whether it's a buy or a sell, and B, whether it's an up market or a down market, and specifically an extreme up market or an extreme down market. Like those really big up days and the really big down days was what I was primarily focused on. I wanted to know what is happening around the edges, what is happening under extreme market conditions. And what I hypothesized was executing a large sell order in a down market would be more costly than executing a large buy order in an up market in terms of price impact. And here's what's amazing. And before we get into actual theory behind and why I felt this way, this is what I ended up discovering. And this is what I found. When I first found this, Dr. Wood, Dr. McKinnish, Dr. Christine Chang, Dr. Shigato Chakravarti, they all said your code must be wrong. Your math must be incorrect because nothing in the literature shows this. Everything in the literature shows that buys are always more costly than sells. And so I came in with something that was a bit counter to all that, kind of, you know, tapping into my early contrarian nature. And I was like, that's not what I found. And I think there's good reasons why this actually is the case. What do you guys think about just big buy orders and big sell orders in terms of price impact, in terms of slippage? From all your centuries trading in the pits, do you guys think there should be a difference?
You realize most large orders are crosses, right?
A cross meaning you mean it's hedged elsewhere?
Yeah, it's a predetermined trade. Like you're not going to get a 500,000 shares to print up without you know customers don't have 500,000 shares. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's just not how it works. So if you're this is the problem I have with people when they see like high option volume or unusual option volume trading on the bid or on the offer. It's a predetermined trade 9 times out of 10. They matched up buyers and sellers hours ago.
Okay, that's a pretty good point. Okay, Tom, your thoughts.
My thoughts are that, well, first of all, I never would have. All my instincts would suggest that executing a large sell order is way more complex than way harder than executing a large buy offer. Or why would you think it's any different? Why would anybody think it's different?
Well, I mean, again, I mean, the prevailing wisdom was always that it's going to be more costly. And I'll explain what I mean by costly in terms of we're going to break down the price impact a little bit more here in a minute. But yeah, that's interesting. So why does your gut tell you that though? I'm curious why you immediately went to the sales being more costly than the buys.
Well, I don't even.
It's almost like 2007 Dr. Jim.
I don't care if it's
tracking with a Tom Sosnoff.
Ever since after 1987, as soon as they figured out put skew, as soon as puts became more expensive than calls, why would it ever be a situation that visualized how that basically sent a message about the velocity and let everybody visualize how velocity works in option pricing. And so the idea that up moves, there's always stuff for sale, always, no matter what. But down moves is the only time that there's we run out of buyers. I don't even know why there'd be a question about this.
I think that's a very interesting point. Now, again, you got to keep in mind that in 2007, you know, the artist that wasn't even Dr. Jim at the time wrote this. He didn't even know what put skew was. He didn't even know put skew existed.
But put skew existed so that from 1987. So if you were a PhD.
I mean, I was six, so I guess I should have had it figured out.
No, but if you were a PhD student, you know, you could have actually put together the fact that there's put skew and therefore puts would be harder to execute. Downside moves would be harder to execute than upside. That's all.
If I was a PhD student focusing on derivatives, of course.
But
I was not a PhD student. I wasn't focused on derivatives.
There's always stuff for sale. There's not, because we've talked about this before. There's always natural sellers. Because people that are long, you know, I like to use the analogy of the predator analogy. There are always sellers, but there are, unfortunately, there are not always buyers. And in a world of equities, because that's different in futures, in a world of equities, okay, everybody's, the world's long, passively long equities, therefore there's always natural sellers. But in the world of, which means who are the natural buyers on the way down? They're only shorts, and there's not that big a percentage of shorts. In commodities, it's a little different. In commodities, it's harder to fill the upside because there are no natural sellers.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with you. 100% agree with you. And so, by the way, just a quick little side note. For anyone that's thinking about, like, I know a lot of, like, grad students watch our shows. I mean, a lot of them reach out to me, and they're doing a master's, you know, thesis or a PhD dissertation, whatever. That would be a very interesting topic. So instead of looking at, you know, like price impact by, you know, market condition, look at price impact over time and kind of cut it off at pre-1987 to post-1987. It'd be very interesting to see. I mean, my data set was around the internet bubble. So I was only focused on the internet bubble.
Well, the problem is there is no data from 1987 because there wasn't an SPX back then. It didn't trade. So
no, of course there's data. Of course there's data. Of course there's stock data before 1987.
There's not good derivatives data. There's not.
Spoken like a man that's, you know, done his whole career in derivatives. You have to understand, Tom. let's broaden your horizon a bit. There is a world of finance outside of puts and calls. Right? There is a world of finance outside of put skew and
I'm agreeing
velocity
with you.
And
I'm agreeing,
you know, theta
with you.
Decay.
Obviously you're not agreeing with him enough.
I'm agreeing with you. I agree that you're
but you just said there's no data before 1987. I was telling Grant
there's
to
data,
look at
but
data.
It's not the same because the VIX was.
I heard him say that too, Dr. Jim. I heard him say that
too. It
was
a different index, was the primary.
Okay. All right. Fine. Fair enough. Whatever. I don't care. Let's go to the next slide because I'm going to tell y'all how it really went down in the pits. So, John, go ahead. This is it. This is the reason why my dissertation worked. This is the reason why my hypothesis was supported. And I know this is exactly what you all experienced over the course of your many decades selling in the.
No, if you think this is the reason, then. They might take away your PhD.
I'm just saying. This is the reason. There's no other reason that would make sense. Not theoretically, not practically. Short seller constraints, gentlemen. This is the reason. This is why it's more costly to sell in an extreme down market than sell or than buy in an extreme up market. Because of short seller constraints. Now, let me walk you through how this works in case you guys are unfamiliar with the topic. So if there's a pool of sellers, that's 100 sellers, let's say, and this is just a normal pool of sellers, and anybody who wants to sell or short can sell or short. So in this example, you have 20 retail shorts, you have 30 informed shorts. So these would be shorts who have an informational advantage over you, Tom, and an informational advantage over you, Tony. And then there's retail sell orders. So in this situation, the pool of informational asymmetry, or the degree of informational asymmetry, I should say, is 30%. So when you guys were trading, like, I wasn't even there, and I already know how it went down. Like, you guys know, you saw the guys that had an advantage over you. Like, you saw the guys coming up to your post, like, oh, here comes Joe again. Man, here comes Bill. This guy gets me every time. And so you knew that he had an informational advantage over you. Well, in this pool, the informational asymmetry is only 30%. Because of short seller constraints, that are a lot less so in a market that's 2024. Again, another great topic for a PhD dissertation. But back in the day, short seller constraints were a lot more pervasive. Like, everybody who wanted to short couldn't short because of accounts, because of restrictions, whatever. And so essentially, the retail shorts are eliminated from the pool. Well, you know what that does to you guys, gentlemen? That makes it harder for you to trade against Ed. That makes it harder for you to trade against Bill. Because now, the percentage and the degree of informational asymmetry is even greater. And so what are you guys going to do? What did you do to protect yourself against these far superior traders? You dropped your bid more aggressively in an extreme down market because you were afraid of that informational asymmetry. Then you would raise your offer in an extreme up market. Hence, my hypothesis is supported, and they let me out of Memphis, and I am now Dr. Jim. Your thoughts?
That's beyond ridiculous. I mean, it's not even remotely the case. I mean, I'm glad.
Okay, explain to me why.
I'm glad the statute of limitations is up so they can't take away your PhD.
I'm not sure that it is, but go ahead.
I'm glad that is the case. I explained to you earlier what the whole reasoning is. It just has to do, it has nothing to do with, first of all, short sellers don't sell into down moves.
According to who?
According to short sellers.
According to just some old wives' tale?
No, but most short sellers sell because of uptick rules. Most short sellers sell on top moves.
Okay.
But listen, even if you wanted to think that, it's not, there's always been constraints on short selling, which is why which is why the short side of the ARB trades so much higher. But the bottom line is it's easier to buy than sell, because anybody can, you can always buy everything. You can't always sell everything. Like I said before, it's the same logic. And because of that, that's why the downside, that's why I don't understand why anybody would have ever said the upside. All this stuff is, kind of,
it's all because of informational asymmetry. You have to understand in the
no
world
such
of
thing as informational asymmetry.
And see that's the rub. And I knew you were going to say that. in the world, and I don't necessarily disagree with you now, but again, keep in mind, this is a 2007 Dr. Jim. I was just Mr. Jim at the time.
There's no such thing as informational asymmetry. I'll leave it there.
I mean, that's your professional opinion. There are a lot of very well-decorated professionals that would strongly disagree with you. Makes a market. That's what makes a market.
Not that I've ever
just
traded.
Telling you that in the world of finance, hold on, in the world of finance literature, informational asymmetry is a very, very hot topic. And it was in 2005, 6, 7, 8 when I was looking at it. I'm sure it's even more so now. And so, I mean, there are a lot of traders that would strongly, strongly disagree with you.
Oof, I don't think so. But we'll see.
Okay. This is it. So Tony, I mean, this is what you did, right? When you saw Ed coming around the corner, when you saw Bill come around the corner with his informational advantage, you tucked your tail underneath your legs and you dropped your bid really far, right?
You're not wrong. Like, you know, there were times when you would get people or brokers to come into the pit that you knew from past performance they were going to be buyers or sellers of these options, and you might skew your bid offer to represent what you thought they were going to do so you could get a more advantageous price on your buy or sell, because I was going to take the other side of what they were going to do. But it had nothing to do with any, you know, like they knew something or anything like that.
Okay.
So I could control, like we tell retail investors today, the only thing you can control is your entry with your strategy. And that was my strategy on entry.
Nice. So a little game theory there. A little game theory with, you see Bill coming by, you see Ed coming by. You know he's a historical buyer, he's a historical seller. So you're going to adjust your, you know, a little price discrimination. I like that.
In so many words.
I mean, it's just like when you were slinging those jeans out of your trunk. You know, I mean, you saw guys coming that you knew this guy was going to get 5 or 6. It's like, well, let me just goose the price up a little bit.
If he had a fancy car, that's correct. That's correct.
That's right. That's right. So there you go. So Tony, thank you. You just saved my dissertation. I don't think they're going to go back and take it from me. So I appreciate you very much for that. But let's get him a few takeaways. Let's get him into some market measures. And it's always a good Monday when I can explain to Tom how it works in the pits. We've always heard that markets take the stairs up and the elevator down. And part of the reason why this is the case could be the institutional price asymmetry that we observed in my dissertation, an asymmetry that could be explained by the informational asymmetry that exists and that Tom knows and that Tom loves in the pool of sellers caused by short sale constraints. And oh, by the way, for anyone that is a little short on cash, when my dissertation was bound and put in the University of Memphis library, I went in there, I found it on the shelf, and I put a $20 bill on page 44. And so if anybody ever took it off the shelf and read it all the way through, or at least page 44, they'll find $20. Now, I'm almost certain it's all been, it's all electronic now. So I don't know who got that $20, but if it's still in paper at the University of Memphis library, somebody's got $20 waiting for them.
Good job.
I don't know. I think Tom's a little salty. I think Tom got picked off a few times too many by Bill. And so he's a little salty about this. I get it. I understand.
I'm not salty. I just get a kick out of academia trying to explain something that isn't that difficult to explain, but you try to make it a little more complicated than it could be.
That's all academia is. You just described academia in like 20 words or less. That's exactly what it is.
No, I'm a big supporter of academia, but it's just funny that, you know, like some topics are kind of cracked me up. But I'm glad you did this, because if you didn't do this, you never would have ended up here.
True. That's true. So you mean to tell me?
No, I don't want you to read. I don't want you to read anything into that.
Well, no, I mean, I don't know how to take that. It sounded like a pretty classic 50-50 comp assault. I'm not sure, but if I wasn't Dr. Jim, you would have never taken my call. If I was just Mr. Jim, you 100%. Probably just would have.
At that time, 100%.
Right.
150%. I'll skew it a little bit.
I just needed an extra doctor.
Sure. Yeah, understood. But I mean, we all do. I like it.
He thought you were going to take care of his bad knees. That's why.
No, I can't do that, but I can help him with his informational asymmetry problems. Oh, yeah.
Very good. All right, Dr. Jim, we're going to take a quick 90-second break, come back. We got a market measure next. Peace.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live, Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live, Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered intraday trader.